Hi, I'm Marcelo Vitaro, and you're listening to a podcast where nostalgia comes alive. It's Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. Roll it!
Welcome to Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Since July of 2021, Jake and his friends have interviewed professionals in the worlds of acting, directing, writing, puppeteering, and many more. Who will they be chatting with in this week's interview? Find out in this Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, where nostalgia comes alive. Happy to be here with us, thank you for joining. I'm your host, Jake Dunmore, and today's always our co-host, Chris Bixby and Matt Bingo. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing good. Hello everybody, how are you, Jake?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thank you for asking. What do we have for today?
It's been quite a bit since we've had two guests on one episode, but we do today. Our guests are puppeteers, puppet designers, and puppet builders for film and television and a lot more. Some of their more notable projects include the Netflix series Waffles and Mochi, Kidding on Showtime, Crank Yankers, The Pacific Pals in California, and The Little Mermaid Live. These two have their own company, Swazzle Incorporated, which offer a variety of services, custom puppets, rental puppets, and a lot more. We'll talk about all that and more. We are delighted to welcome the creative minds of Swazzle, Sean and Patrick Johnson. Welcome, gentlemen. Happy to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yes, happy to have you on.
Happy to have you here. So, to kick this off, could you tell our audience a little bit about yourselves and what you do?
Sure. My name is Patrick.
And I'm Sean.
And we're twins. We just want to get that out of the way.
There will be some over-talking. If you edit, I'm sorry.
Yes. And we're puppeteers and puppet builders, and as you said, our company is called Swazzle, and we've built puppets for projects big and small,
and we've been doing this for pretty much our whole life. We really caught the puppetry bug when we were in junior high school, and we have been doing something with puppets ever since then.
Wonderful. So what were your childhoods like before having careers in puppetry?
Well, we started building puppets when we were 13, almost 14. So
our childhood was short before puppetry.
but it was fun. We grew up in the Bay Area in California, San Francisco Bay Area. And our family was very into lots of arts, very involved in the community. We did lots of volunteer work. We were involved in scouting. And between us and our two sisters, we were always doing something.
Yeah. So this, maybe it's the first in a while since you guys talked to two people, but maybe the first time that you've talked to two Eagle Scouts.
That's right.
Yes, I'd say that is a first.
And when we showed an interest in puppetry, we were very much encouraged by our parents to take over the garage, which became our first puppet workshop. And we transformed the garage into our shop, and we started building puppets right there.
Yeah, some of our first shows we did for free at some local institutions like the library or the recreation department in San Leandro, the town that we grew up in.
And we're also very encouraged by our art teacher, Audrey Brown, in our junior high school. And she was one of those awesome art teachers that you hope to have when you're, you know, an influential student in junior high.
Influential or a to be influenced student.
That's right. And we're also influential. No. She was very encouraging as well. So with our family, with our teachers, we were eventually led to an organization called the San Francisco Bay Area Puppeteers Guild, which is a guild of the Puppeteers of America. And once in that guild, now around high school, we started meeting real professional puppeteers, real professional puppet builders, folks that had worked with Industrial Light and Magic or had worked at the Muppet Studio in New York. And from them, we started to learn, you know, actual puppet building techniques. You got to remember that when we were building puppets, there was no internet, right?
Right, yeah.
People now have resources available to them that we would have loved to have when we were in high school and starting to build what we consider to be professional puppets. That's pretty much how we all kind of got started. And that is our childhood in a nutshell.
Wonderful to hear. So I'm kind of curious, do you remember your first professional jobs in the puppetry field?
Yes. Yeah. So the first professional jobs, professional meaning someone is giving you money to do it,
right,
would have been our own puppet shows. And the first places that we did puppet shows mostly for money, after we did free shows and kind of got some more experience, even though we were still starting out, was through the library system. And every summer, maybe this, you know about these, they have the summer reading programs. And our first, you know, actual paid professional work was doing puppet shows for summer reading programs. And we toured those all around the Bay Area for starters. And then in 2000, we moved down to Los Angeles, and our first sort of toehold into getting any sort of work in LA was finding our way into that library system, performing shows for the LA Public Library, LA County Library, and all of the surrounding counties and cities as well.
And our first opportunity to work on a professional production, where we weren't being paid, but we were just sort of around professionals, was up again in the Bay Area. Images in Motion, which was a company, we were friends with Lee Armstrong and Kamala Portuguese, who founded that company. They're also very influential in our development as artists. And they were doing a couple of local productions, and they needed some extra hands, or they just wanted to give us some professional experience. And so we were brought on for a couple of days of shooting to grab a rod here and there for some local productions. But that was our first opportunity to actually be in a working soundstage on an actual set, not as being paid, but as but it did sort of give us some idea of what the professional working environment is like.
Yeah, I was going to say there were cameras, monitors, a floor director. So it really, you know, had that feel of, oh, this is a small taste of a professional production.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So a majority of your work is best known through your puppet company, as you mentioned, Swazzle. I'm curious, how did you two decide to create Swazzle?
Yeah, so it's a great question. A lot of what we do now is we build puppets for productions big and small. As you mentioned, some of our biggest credits as a company are puppet building credits. But as Sean mentioned, we started our company originally to perform puppet shows. Originally, it was called Johnson Brothers Puppets. That was the name that we came up with. And then we had that name for a couple of years, and then we eventually came up with the name Swazzle. If there's any puppet fans or aficionados out in your audience, they might know what the word Swazzle comes from. That's a fun little thing to Google, or ask AI, you'll get the wrong answer. But anyway, so then we started to do our live shows, and that's when we became a company. We started our company to perform live puppet shows.
Yeah, we actually didn't start out seeking to have a like puppet shop for hire, but we started, you know, building puppets for our own shows, and eventually the puppets that we wanted to build got too large for the, you know, the garage workshop we were working out of. So eventually we got our own workshop, and then we had our own workshop. We're like, okay, if we're only doing shows for the summer, what are we doing for the rest of the year while we're paying rent on this workshop? And so that's when we started building rental puppets for productions like Little Shop of Horrors. And then as we sort of began to build our portfolio and resume, we started to get inquiries from other people. Oh, can you guys build puppets for this? And so we started naturally building, until it sort of transitioned to a time where we pretty much stopped doing the live library shows and focused on the building aspect of it. Although we still do perform, and we still are working puppeteers. Sometimes our puppet builds has, you know, given us entree into performing jobs as well.
Nice. And that's actually a perfect segue into the next question. What was your first kind of major job through Swazzle?
Our first major job through Swazzle actually came through the Kyoto Brothers. Mm-hmm. So Kyoto Brothers They're an awesome special effects and creature shop in Southern California.
And animation.
And animation.
Stop motion
animation. Yeah, stop motion animation. Definitely. And they do really incredible work. Killer Clowns from Outer Space is the movie they are most known for, but also Team America, World Police, Alien Christmas, which was on Netflix recently. And so we first moved to LA, we had some friends that said, oh, you got to get in touch with the Chiodo brothers and talk to them. And so we said, okay, great. And so they gave a couple little jobs to us, handed things our way. But our first real major opportunity probably came with an episode of The Simpsons that aired in 2010. And the Chiodo brothers were hired to produce a segment, an all puppet segment. And they then hired us to build the puppets for that segment. And then we all staffed up the puppeteers for that. So it was a segment of The Simpsons that was designed to look like a parody of The Muppet Show. Katy Perry was the guest star. And we got to perform the puppets on that. And I feel like that was our first real big break. Although there
I was going to say the Pee Wee Herman show.
Yeah.
Now I need to pull out a calendar and see what came first. But this
right.
was also a collaboration with the Chiodo brothers, where there were three puppet companies essentially building the puppets. So the Chiodo brothers made things like Magic Screen and Mr. Window. And then there was another company who made Cherry and
Conky.
Conky, the costumes. And then we were brought in to make the hand puppets of the show. So things like Terry, we made
Blocky, the fish.
Yeah.
Soft puppets. And then also we did perform that. That was probably around, it was around that same time. So those were some really, that was our first real big opportunities.
Yeah, 2010 for us was a year that a lot of things came together in a positive way. Now remember, we had been in LA since 2000, so
right. So set your clocks, you got 10 years. Also, there were some smaller opportunities. We worked on a show called Team Smithereen with Dan Clark, who is a writer, director, and puppet creator.
And the puppet
show creator.
If any puppet nerds listen to this, they might be familiar with a show called Bratz of the Lost Nebula, which is a show that he created for the Jim Henson Company. And we've had a long-term working relationship with him. And really the first time working with him would be 2008. That was in a series of really crazy web shorts called Team Smithereen.
Google it. It's where puppets destroy each other in hilarious fashion.
Nice. Nice. So, you both also worked on various projects with the Muppets, including the 2011 film with Jason Segel and Amy Adams. What was it like getting to work on that?
It was all right. I'm kidding.
It was amazing. So our first...
And this was us as puppeteers outside of our company.
Yeah. Right. So that's the thing that we do is as a company, we build. We also sometimes transition into performing opportunities with our company's work, right? And then we also have built for other companies. So we built, as individuals, we built puppets for Jim Henson's Creature Shop, for example. And then we've also performed as individuals outside of our company as well. And our work with the Muppets would be that. So in 2011, that was the Jason Segel Muppet movie. That's the first one we worked on. We worked on Muppets Most Wanted, and then a few of the things that went along with it, some of the commercials and the TV appearances. And first day on that was incredible. We were shooting at the Disney lot in the ABC building across the street, and all the puppeteers were sitting in a room. They were just kind of like moving offices around. So we're in this room that didn't even have furniture. We're all just, 20 puppeteers sitting on the floor, just happy to be working on a Muppet movie. And then Bill Beretta comes in with his little paper and starts giving us assignments. And
your assignment was?
My assignment was to be Sam the Eagle in that shot.
Yeah, it was Rashida Jones in the office talking to Jason Segel and Amy Adams. And it's they also used that same scene in a lot of promos, a big gang of Muppets. Bill Beretta, when he's assigning roles, he asked me, he goes, Patrick, can you do two puppets at the same time? I said, yes, sure. I mean, I had been doing that with our live shows, so sure. So he said, okay, great. You'll be Floyd and Animal for this. Now, of course, when you're doing these, you're not doing the voices. So anyway, that was our first day of shooting,
and
was that office scene.
Yeah. And as it happened, it was a small room because it was a real office location. So you had all of the puppeteers that you would expect to be there, all the Muppet performers, and then a bunch of us folks, you know, us LA puppeteers in there, plus Jason Segel and Amy Adams and Rashida Jones. And we're all in this. And I just, by luck of positioning, happened to be sitting positioned right behind Kermit and Steve Whitmire. And so I'm like, okay, day one on my first Muppet thing. All right, here we go.
My job is to not mess this up.
My job is to not do not drop.
Give them a reason to call me back tomorrow if I can.
But also, you know, do your job. You know, keep the puppet alive, keep it moving, you know.
You can't be fearful either.
Yeah, you can't.
They'll let you know if you've gone too far or you've done something that's off. They'll be like, hey, why don't you, Animal, next time try blah, blah, blah. You just go, okay, great.
Yeah, you can't be deer in the headlights. You have to make choices because you're also an actor. You have to follow the action. You have to pay attention in the scene.
Otherwise, they'd throw a bunch of C-stands in there.
And then as it happened, that scene was also clipped for the trailer. So my performance of like Sam Eagle, like looking, is like in the trailer. So when I first saw that, can you imagine seeing that in a movie theater? Not even expecting the trailer to come up.
Right.
Like, oh my God, that was me. That was me doing that. yeah, it was incredible.
One of the most fun things we got to work on with the Muppets was they did this commercial that Kirk Thatcher directed for the Crumpets, it's a British like breakfast. It's like basically we call it English muffins, but
yeah,
they call it crumpets. And they did the Crumpet Show, and it was all shot on a soundstage, either at Warner Brothers or Disney. I forget where it was.
Paramount.
Anyway, it was a soundstage, which is always fun to be in. Kirk Thatcher directing. And there's a lot of opportunities for people like ourselves to play a big range of characters. At one point, I got to be Nigel, who's the band conductor, just on a line of puppets with crumpets going by. It was really fun.
That was really fun. That was a great production. Working with Kirk Thatcher as a director was always awesome.
Oh, he's the best. Yeah.
One of my favorite experiences wasn't on the first day of the Muppets 2011, but later in the production. And it was cool for lots of reasons. It was the telethon theme.
Yes.
Telethon scene. And so I was on the very end. I was, who's the guy with the Muppaphones?
Yeah, Marvin Suggs.
Marvin Suggs. It's Marvin Suggs. And what was cool is we got to sing Rainbow Connection. So that was cool.
Yeah.
And it was in the replica of the Muppet Show Theater. But what was even cooler is we were shooting on the Universal Studios lot. And the soundstage that we were in has now been torn down, but it was, until it was torn down, the oldest continually standing and operational set that was ever created.
Oh, wow.
Originally, it was created for the Phantom of the Opera. So
The silent Phantom of the Opera.
Yes, the silent film Phantom of the Opera.
So watch the silent film Phantom of the Opera. It is a double feature. And then watch Muppets 2011.
Yeah.
And you'll see and start to look for
one of the first times it was used. One of the last times it was used. But what's really cool about that is not only the historic nature of the set and the soundstage, but our trailers were outside and we can hear the Jurassic Park ride going on. And then the tram tours were coming by. And the tram tours would be like, oh, and in this stage, you know, whatever it is, stage 19 or whatever it is, they're actually making a new Muppet movie. And if you look carefully, you might see some, you know, Muppet characters, you know, moving about. And then we're just standing outside and we're waving to the tram tour. And I'm like, we're on the tram tour. Like, how iconic, how amazing that we get to be the people that people are seeing as they're enjoying their vacation, seeing real movies be made. That was a wonderful experience.
Muppets Most Wanted was shot all in England, mostly. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, well, this Muppet ride has been lots of fun, but you never know when it's going to end. And it may have ended for us because we don't live in England. And they hired a lot of really talented British puppeteers to work on that show, that movie. And but then they rewrote the ending. And so there's this whole scene on the Tower of London with all the lead actors. And it's on the rooftop. And they reshot the entire thing. So they rebuilt the Tower of London rooftop at a soundstage in Burbank and brought in puppeteers to cover that, all that entire scene. So that was fun because I actually have more screen time, weirdly, in Muppet the Most Wanted as a performer. We also shot some stuff in the train station in LA, but that final scene, we're all over that. I was playing Beauregard for that scene. What's really tricky is they built one side of the tower set, and so they would shoot their coverage one way, and they leave the camera in the same position. They say, okay, everybody, flip positions.
Right.
So now, because now we're shooting from the other angle. So now if you were facing camera, you're behind camera. Now, blah, blah, blah. So it was kind of cool because we got to be in that whole final scene, a movie that we thought we certainly wouldn't be in.
Yeah. So like Patrick mentioned, we worked on that for just a few days, but actually minutes of screen time is we're in that movie more. Mm-hmm. But it's also cool because, you know, Ricky Gervais and, you know, Tina Fey and Ty Burrell were all there as well. And that's always a fun thing about working on a Muppet project,
yeah,
is the people you get to work with. I was chatting with somebody and they're like, they mentioned Jack White. I'm like, oh, Jack White. Oh, I worked with him. They're like, what? When you work at Jack White? Oh, yeah, I worked with him on the episode of the Muppets ABC show. And it's like, oh, you know, I shared an elevator with Tom Bergeron and I got to tell him how America's Funniest Home Videos is the funniest show on television and still is.
Absolutely. Speaking of the ABC series, what was it like getting to work on that?
Oh my God, that was so fun.
Here's the funny thing is, I think everyone would imagine that the most fun is probably when the cameras are rolling. But what's interesting about a show like this, at least from my experience, the most fun for us, for me, was being in the green room, because you show up on a day when we're there, if we're working on a show like that, we're only there because they have 20 or so people, you know, on their list of performers. And so for me, it was just the most fun was being in that green room and hanging out with all those really cool people, probably some of which you've interviewed on your podcast.
But what the other thing that was really unique about that show, first of all, it's so fun to work on. It was really cool because the main director and really also camera operator, Randall Einhorn, he comes from The Office and he comes from Survivor. You know, one of my other favorite TV shows. And so there was always at least three cameras rolling. And so what that means as us, as a background performer, is the normal way that you would make a Muppet production is you would shoot your wide and you might bring in folks like us to fill in the background characters. And then as they move in closer and closer, they start to fill those roles with the principal performers. Until you get to a single, then it's like, okay, this is going to be Steve Whitmire doing this role or whatever. But the cool thing about this ABC series is because they had three and sometimes four cameras rolling, we had lots of opportunities to get close-ups because you never knew what shot they were going to be using. So you always had to be alive. We had a quad split on the monitor so you could see, okay, I'm Animal in this scene. Okay, and here I'm in the close-up, here I'm in the wide. You had to make sure it all was working for all the shots. The camera was handheld, coming in, coming out, moving around. It was all very live the way they were shooting it. But it gave us the opportunity, as on a Muppet show where we're normally, you know, just more like background performers, that gave us the opportunity to actually have singles and close-ups, which was really fun and a unique experience.
One of the my fondest memories of working on that show was there was a karaoke scene with Ed Helms doing karaoke with the Muppets and all of us puppeteers crammed into Rolf's Tavern. And it was just a lot of fun. There was a sort of a giddy kind of joyous feeling on that set. And then also another fun opportunity was later on when they started to integrate more of the like an old school Muppet Show characters.
Yes.
It's always fun to get your assignment in the day. And that day was fun because they said, okay, Sean, Patrick, you guys are going to be Muppaphones. I'm like, okay, great. And I remember we had this, they choreographed this like little Muppaphone, like number, like, I think it was Misha Sisti was giving us some points about when we would be ow. Cause he was doing drumming.
Yeah.
And we practiced, and 100% guarantee that whatever we practiced, I didn't do.
That's the fun of it.
I think he said, ow, my mouth didn't open. It didn't matter. Whatever. I don't think anyone knows. Well, now they do.
But yeah, that was a really fun production. First of all, they shot it on the Disney lot. We had the big sound stage, and that's just a wonderful place to go just for the history of it. So it's always cool to be like, to get your call sheet and see Walt Disney Studios, and you have your, I mean, we were there long enough and worked enough days that we had like security cards and passes, and that was cool. And the way they distributed credits, there's some thing that like ABC, you know, for some reason they limit the number of credits they give out. Don't know why that is, but on one episode, I managed to work enough days to get my name in the credits at the end.
I never did.
Yeah.
Keep adding an IMDb and they keep taking it away.
It had to work like 5 days. I don't know. Anyway, but it was
certain number of days on any number of episodes.
It was an amazing experience. Yeah.
Of course, definitely. So kind of moving on from the Muppets, what was it like working with the Fraggle Rock characters on the Do It Anyway music video?
Yeah, that was fun.
That was so much fun.
That was sort of born out of our relationship with Henson during Puppet Up. So,
and also a relationship with the Creature Shop.
Right, because, as builders.
Because on that job, we're also helping with the puppets. So there's a job called Puppet Wrangler, which maybe some of your audience knows about. And they're the ones we say it's like hair, makeup, wardrobe, first aid.
Special effects.
For the puppets, rigging and all that. So we are kind of doing double duty. So we are there kind of brought in, you know, on the Creature Shop side, and then also on the performing side. So it's always fun to have lots of tasks and jobs on a set, because when you're also rigging the puppet and also performing, there's no downtime for you.
Never a dull moment.
Yeah, never a dull moment.
The nice thing also about having opportunities to work on a project like that, and also during the time, I think in 2005, we started doing the classes at Henson as part of the Puppet Up classes. And that lasted for quite a few years. But we started as performers. We then transitioned into teaching puppetry techniques for the improv actors. But the greatest gift of all, when you have an opportunity to do something like that, is putting those puppets on your hands.
Yeah.
Because you go, oh, got it. That's what they feel like on the inside. That's what a professional television quality puppet feels like. So
you know,
like
you can decipher so much from the outside, but until you put them on, you're like, aha.
Yeah. I mean, the X factor with any puppet performance is the puppeteer, you know, because they're the ones that bring it to life. But really, when you have an instrument that's designed to be performed, boy, does that make that job so much more fun and enjoyable and also easy. Right. Like that Wembley puppet, I performed Wembley for that music video. And just the things, you could just move your finger just the slightest way and something will happen with that puppet.
Yeah, and I performed Boober. And then Victor Urid was the puppet captain.
Victor, he's
love Victor, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. And he was really awesome to work with. Because he did let us have our close-ups.
Right.
So instead of him stepping in and taking a close-up as the lead puppeteer, he was like, I think these guys got it. I think they should do the close-up. So he was very generous in that way. Mm-hmm. And then the other person we worked with, Donna Kimball, who's also another amazing
Donna.
And puppeteer. She was playing Moki in that. And then, as we all know, has gone on to take over the role of Moki for the new Apple series. But most wonderfully, we got to work with Karen Prell, who is Red Fraggle. But because of our involvement in the San Francisco Bay Area Puppeteers Guild, and because she was working at Pixar at the time and living in the Bay Area, we had known her already for years and years and years and years and years since we were practically in high school. So it was like a reunion of sorts. And
yeah,
now
it took us moving to LA to work with her.
Yeah. And then now we get to all meet up and we're already friends and we get to work together on a Fraggle project. And what was really cool about this is the Fraggles hadn't quite had their full reemergence yet. So it really was special. Like this was like a little, you know, a little diamond, you know.
One of those things on the bucket list you didn't even know was on the bucket list. You go, oh, I get to work on a Fraggle thing?
Yeah, no, it's interesting that because of this, you know, because of nostalgia and things coming back around, we've happened to have grown up at an era where now we get to work with our heroes. So right. We get to work with Paul Rubens and, you know, on the Pee Wee Herman show, like for real, for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
We get to work with the Muppets. We get to work with Fraggle Rock. We get to do puppets of the Simpsons. Like we grew up with all of this. stuff. So it's kind of amazing to grow up with it and now be a part of it.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The music video itself is great. It yes. turned out really amazing.
Yes.
It was really fun, and it's a catchy song. Mm-hmm. And
also, we got to work in the Henson Recording Studio, yeah. which is like a storied recording studio in Hollywood. It's where they recorded We Are the World and a lot of great, like, I mean, every musical legend. That's one of the fun things about being on the Henson lot. You never know at any given moment who you'll see walking around. On a Muppet show, you might see like some actors or celebrities and musicians. But here at Henson, they have so many great musicians.
You could be Paul McCartney walking.
Paul McCartney, Bruce Springsteen. You don't know who's ever going to show up in that studio.
That is amazing. So I'm curious, what was it like puppeteering in the Happy Time Murders?
Great.
That was... Okay, so the Muppet stuff was all very fun. Of all the film sets that I've been on, I had the most fun on the Happy Time Murders. And I know the movie wasn't well received and all of that, but what I've learned from working in this industry is there's very little correlation between your experience on set and the final product. So you could have a movie or a show that is like, oh, this is really challenging, this is really hard. And then you see the final product and you're like, wow, okay, that is great. And it's funny, I had no idea. This show was so fun. So it's the first time working with Brian Henson, not first time with him, but him as a director on a film. And Melissa McCarthy was hilarious and so friendly and giving and would play with the puppets and then the whole team of people. It was really this kind of new Henson group of people. So when you work on a Muppet show, there's like the Muppet folks. But what's really cool about this is this was the Puppet Up people, the people that had come through the ranks of Puppet Up.
It's kind of like Puppet Up the feature.
Really. Yeah, it was like Puppet Up the feature film. It almost felt
the
like
sensibilities,
that.
The sense yeah. of humor.
It's like that was our final project is the way it felt. But because of the nature of the movie, you got to do things like, you know, fight scenes and have like a glass bottle broken over your head, or, you know, you have a shootout, you know, and these are things that, you know, when you say puppets, you don't normally get to do that stuff.
Yeah. When we did one of the scenes we did was an ambush in an alley. And I was, I think, working with Victor, just doing some assisting on this character that just gets shot up, and they had put squibs all over the entire set. And they had these like weird things that they would fire at something to like, it would create sparks. And before that, they had the technicians who rigged everything. You know, usually these guys are special effects guys, you know, older gentlemen missing a couple of fingers. I think they would do it even if they weren't being paid. And they go like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to be firing some squibs here, and there's blah, blah, blah. And so they give you all the equipment. You have to have like, we had headphones or earplugs, and they had goggles for us. So already under a puppet set, you're already crammed into underneath a position next to somebody else. Now you're wearing these, you know, headphones and goggles. And what's funny is how quickly it all happens. Like, and action, and it's over. And go, oh, okay, I guess we shot that. And then watching the movie, you know, they're shooting with multiple cameras, and it just really, they extend the moment and slow it down and really make it fun.
One of my, you know, peak experiences on that film is, so years prior, when we first started getting involved in the Jim Henson Company, we worked as puppet builders, and the very first puppets that we built were for Puppet Up. And two puppets that I made for Puppet Up is, one is this kind of like this gray kind of Sasquatchy like character with like kind of bunny ears. And on my first day of Happy Time Murders, I was assigned that character to do a camera, just a walk by on camera to open up a scene. And I was like, cool. Brian Henson directing a feature film, and I get to perform a character that I built years ago for Puppet Up. And then one of the other puppets that I made, this red crab, is also featured in the movie, and Brian is playing the puppet. He uses that puppet a lot in Puppet Up as well. So for me, it's very special movie because I've two puppets that I made are in the movie, and I got to perform, even though it was just for a second, but I got to perform one of them in the film as well.
And then the first puppet I built for Puppet Up was this gray alien character, which gets used quite a lot. It was on some tour. They'd been to Australia or something like that. That was the first time that puppet entered the cast. And we were in a Puppet Up class one time, and Brian goes to us, he goes, what you guys built the alien? I'm like, oh no, what happened? I said, I did. Why? Did it fall apart? Oh no, no, it's great. I've been using it in all the shows. I'm like, oh, good. One thing he liked about it were the really long arms. Something that we've been incorporating now into puppets that we build is I kind of see why that. I mean, those are really extremely long, almost extreme, and he uses it to great effect.
And long fingers off the hands.
Yeah, but I really understand why. And a lot of people, when they design puppets, they design them with sort of animation in mind. They'll cute little stubby little proportions and stuff. But in animation, that arm can reach wherever you need it to. But with puppets, look at all the Muppets and stuff. It's actually incredible how long their arms are and often how short their legs are.
Yeah, look at Kermit as an example.
So that's something that we, you know, again, another thing we sort of have been incorporating, knowledge picked up, you know, through that experience that we've been incorporating in our puppet building as well.
Awesome. So you also worked as puppeteers and puppet builders on the Showtime series Kidding. Can you talk a bit about that?
So Kidding was, someone asked us once, how'd you guys get that job? And it's always a boring story. Therefore, it's perfect for a podcast.
No.
Well, no, I think it's good to know. And so Kidding is a Showtime series. Jim Carrey and a really, you know, great cast with Michelle Gondry directing.
Catherine Keener
is one of the leads. It's like really top notch, you know,
top shelf.
And then us for some reason.
Well, here's the reason. It all goes back to the Happy Time Murders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the way it happened is we have a friend, Ben Simon, who's an actor and a puppeteer involved in Puppet Up. We've worked with him before as a writer. He's written some of our puppet shows. We collaborated on projects together. He now works for animation. He works over at Disney. And he was an actor on a show called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And he got a call while on set of Happy Time Murders. Hey, we're doing a puppet bit with some singing cats. Now, the puppets we didn't build, they were built by another builder who has a tie with Kidding as well. And they need some puppeteers. They asked Ben, I know you're a puppeteer. Don't you know people? And he goes, yeah, I'm a puppeteer. And so he contacted me and said, hey, I'm working on the show. They need some puppeteers. I said, great, let's get a meeting. And so so I had a meeting with the producer of that show, and we staffed up all the puppeteers. We brought in people that we've worked with, some of our builders, and also people that we know also through Puppet Up, because it's a small little world. And super fun, super great episode. The star of the show, she was like, this is the most fun I've had on one of these production numbers, which maybe she says that all the time. I don't know, but it was nice.
It was one of your last days of shooting too.
Yeah. And it was a really fun thing. And it just so happens that that producer, because she was tied in with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is under the same ownership as
the Viacom production.
It's a Viacom, so same as Showtime. When they knew they were doing this show called Kidding, and there was a show within a show, and they needed puppets, she said, oh, I know who to call. And so she reached out to us and also the other builder who and said, we need some puppets built for this.
He did the costumes.
Yeah. So Kidding was a split between two shops. We built the smaller puppets.
Well, Maestro Famada, yeah. And
the more traditional
nickel choir.
Yeah, the more traditional hand puppets. Ennui,
the bread, the little peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. The other builder made the astronauter.
Yeah, the
larger costume. Kind of costume type, right. Element.
So our first
season two, we also built Soap Scum, but he built Soap Scum in the first season. So yeah, it was another partnership collaboration. But it really, the lesson from that is make friends, be professional, and keep your feelers and your attention, because you never know when something is going to pop in and and lead to something else.
When we think about each job like planting a seed, and every job you do is you're planting a seed possibly in another field. And when you plant that seed, you don't know if maybe it'll become an oak tree or an apple tree and produce fruit years from now. Or maybe, as Sean says, it'll be like switchgrass, where it grows up really quickly and gets cut down really quickly and never to be seen again. But you have to plant each seed and you have to care for each seed. And then possibly those will yield benefits in the future.
Right.
And kidding, one of those. Here's what's amazing thing is,
well, then Kidding also led to The Little Mermaid Live.
That's true, because the choreographer
of Kidding was
who's awesome. She's also the choreographer of La La Land.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Mandy Moore is her name.
Yeah, Mandy Moore, but not that many more.
Yeah.
So she was choreographing this Little Mermaid Live, and she was also
she was busy with something else, and they said, "Oh, we need someone."
She was choreographing Kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
She was choreographing this little dance move. And she was like, "Oh, you know, it's funny. I'm actually working in this other show and they need some puppets."
Right.
And we're like, "Oh, okay." And so she put us in touch with the production. And then so that leads directly into us making the puppets for Little Mermaid Live. So that's the sort of organic nature of how this works.
One of the things that's interesting about a show like Kidding is there's puppets in the show, but it's not a puppet show. So when you're on a Muppet show, everything is made for the Muppets. The sets are elevated. There's platforms. Everything is made in consideration of where the puppeteers need to be. When you're doing a show like Kidding, well, we're a small part. We're a small piece of it. And you can try to get as much accommodation as possible. But really, the show is made to accommodate Jim Carrey and the lead actors so that they can do what they do. So in a way, it also is a good lesson in being learning how to be adaptable
right.
to different situations. Because in a way, a Muppet set is set up for a performer, a puppeteer, to be successful, because everything is ready for that person to be good. If you
walk in, the set is elevated, yeah. The monitors are set, everyone understands.
But if you're in the background and you're nobody and no one even knows your name and you say, "I don't have a monitor," three people will swoop down, they'll get a monitor, "What do you need? Okay, hook up, blah, 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 blah." On a show like Kidding, you know, the puppets were an element of the show, but it teaches us to be versatile, because that's an environment where you go, okay, this is not made for me, but how do I make sure I get what I need to do the best work that I can do, so that when they're in the edit room, they're going, "Oh, good, I actually like what I'm seeing."
And then for that show, obviously working with Jim Carrey was amazing, and he was very giving as a performer and very respectful of us, and really treated us like his fellow actors and performers. And after a day of shooting, he would be like, "Thanks, great job." He'd shake everyone's hand. And I remember one particular day we were shooting this one scene, and it was like season one, is a more emotional scene. And that's the thing with the show, is it's a lot of heavy material. Yeah. But we were shooting, and it was a nice group of puppeteers that were involved in this particular scene, a pretty big group. And he was like, thank you. It was really nice. And at the end, Mike Quinn, who you guys hopefully know of or know, said to, mm-hmm. he's a bit of a historian when it comes to Hollywood. He said to Jim Carrey, "You know, this is the soundstage where Dorothy met the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz." And Jim Carrey was like, "Oh my gosh, he is my favorite actor. Thank you so much for telling me that." And it was like this really cool, like, kind of a magical moment. The other thing that was really cool is in season two, they had an all puppet episode.
Right.
And we got to work very closely with, now I'm blanking on the name.
Catherine Keener.
Yeah. Catherine Keener. And she was so awesome. Like, she was just so friendly and cool, and also so giving as an actress. And in fact, so much so that when she was doing her lines and we were doing like the off camera stuff, and she were like interacting with the puppets, she actually wanted the puppet to talk to, even though the puppet wasn't being seen on camera, just to really have that.
She wanted to have a scene partner.
Yeah, she wanted to have a scene partner. She wanted to have that connection. And I thought it was just really cool that an actor as, you know, respected as her and as talented as her, also viewed the puppeteers as, you know, fellow actors in this show.
Probably the most challenging thing we built for Kidding would have been the giant hand even more so than the giant foot. We built this giant Sasquatch foot and then a giant hand. And what's interesting about the hand is it was a combination of three or maybe four departments working together.
Because like you have that building special effects.
You have us puppets, but also then you had the stunt people too, because we had to have special areas so that they could tie down, so they could put anchors. And this thing had to work on location. We shot at the Disney
ranch.
Yeah, Disney ranch in out somewhere. And which is the same right across the pond, which is the same pond that Herbie the Love Bug jumps over in Herbie Love Bug.
And also this is right down the street of the main street where the Muppets encounter the Electric Mayhem.
Yeah, the church in the Muppet movie. Yeah. And nice. Also it's the same location where they shot Pete's Dragon. The woods and stuff
for the Country Bears movie
and country. Yeah, we poked our nose for the giant Country Bear Lodge, which is still there as a standing set. And but anyway, so the first time that giant hand worked, it was outside late at night, and moisture kept collecting on this vinyl that we had covered the hand. And we're like, oh right, that's what we need. This hand rises up in a hydraulic lift, and you know, last thing I want is Jim Carrey to slip and fall on something that we made. So in between takes, Sean and I would go there with towels and have to keep drying, get all the moisture off.
And then finally, we had a scrap of, or maybe we just got a you know, one of those, you know, blankets that they use on set all the time. I think we just eventually put that on top so the moisture wouldn't keep accumulating. Yeah. Yeah, that was a really fun place to be out there on Disney Ranch. One of the first days of shooting season two was a big kind of fantastical song and dance number, and all the puppets were hiding in the bushes, and they had us in these little ghillie suits so we couldn't be seen. And we had
funny, they dressed, originally I was saying, well, we should be dressing in black or we're dressing in green. And I forget whose suggestion it was.
Maybe even costume department
said, what do you guys dress up in this camouflage? And I was like, oh, I suppose that'll work. It's great. I mean, you can't see us at all in those scenes because we're dressed up in sort of like duck hunting costumes.
The funny thing when you end up on a location like that is you become so familiar with it because you're there all day.
Right.
And you're so familiar with it that you start noticing it popping up other places. And you're like, wait a minute. And if you, once you know the island, the dock in that thing, like it'll come up in the most obscure things, everything from like commercials to like TV shows. Like, wait a minute, I know that place. I've been there.
Picard.
Yeah. Season of Picard had a whole scene take place there. Yeah. So it's used all the time. It's one of those go-to.
Also, one of the great opportunities, one of the fun things with our very first meeting, with Kidding, we got to meet Joey Mazzarino, who I know you guys have spoken with.
Yes, he was on
the show.
Wonderful guy.
And that was really fun. You know, he wrote many of the episodes, but also one of his kind of main world building on that show was creating the show within the show. And I, on several days, I'd be like, this whole show that we're shooting within a show, this should be a show. Like, this is a great kids show. I like the whole Pickle Barrel Falls. I like the weird, you know, all the bizarre characters, the Pickle Nickel Choir. There's so many unusual little characters, and it would be a very successful children's show on its own.
The most challenging puppet for that show was the ukulele, called Ukulary. And it was so made for Jim Carrey to perform, and he's basically a ukulele that talks, so it had to be a trigger mechanism, but also it needed to be a strummable ukulele. And his hands were holding himself, and then he needed to be able to strum and all that. So it needed to be made for him. So it was myself and another puppet builder who was making this little heart puppet, which is also quite challenging, that Jim Carrey needed to handle.
Melissa Doss,
great puppet builder, fabricator. And so we were going to have a fitting with him, and it was going to be at his house. She's like, okay. So we're going to Jim Carrey's house. And so what do you talk about on the way to Jim Carrey's house? I don't know. And so we go in there, like, okay. And we get let in, and his assistant is super, super nice. And he was super cool and had good ideas and gave feedback and all that. And it was a great experience. And then I had to go away and, you know, make this puppet. But the first time it played was in a scene where he was appearing on the Conan O'Brien show. So it's like, okay. They already had Conan's audience in there, and they're like, okay, everyone just hang out for a bit. We're going to record this bit for this new TV show that we're doing. And Danny Trejo and Conan O'Brien and Jim Carrey and the puppet that I made like a puppet I've never made before in my life. It's this ukulele that had to be taken apart and it had to have a thumb trigger. And I,
how many did you make?
We made multiples, but it was a, it was a lot to put into this one puppet.
Right.
And for this one scene where they have like an audience of 200 people and okay, we're going and here it is, my puppet. So I was so, you know, not nervous, but I was, you know, I wanted to be prepared. So I basically brought enough material to remake a whole new ukulele if I needed to. Like, I need everything I have. And I just stood back in the monitors, just like nervously watching as they shot the scene. And once he did the thing and they talked and the scene was over, I was like, oh, whew, like I could flow it out of the whole studio. It was a successful day of shooting.
It's funny you talking about the, I saw the most difficult puppet. You said the most difficult puppet. What was cool about this show is every puppet was the most difficult puppet. Right. So Michel Gondry, who was the director of the show, and Jim Carrey, when you get those minds together, you end up with some really interesting, crazy puppets. So not there wasn't a single normal puppet. The most normal puppet was this little librarian puppet, but even she had this little mechanism. Yeah, it was specifically a doll eye that Michel Gondry said, I want this doll eye in there. And then it moves, and it when you pull a trigger, the eyes change colors, which we installed into this puppet's head. So even the most normal puppet wasn't a normal puppet. Every little puppet had some special little thing. Or if it was a normal puppet, you're going to be handed it to the star and saying, here you go.
Yeah.
Have fun. And, you know, any kind of puppet that an actor would perform, the heart being one of them, that thump thump, that's another one where we had multiple standing by. So anytime Thump Thump
five of those
was ready to work, it's like we had a whole box of Thump Thumps, because one thing you want to do, we always say with puppets, as puppet builders, the puppeteer's job is to break the puppets. Not really carelessly break it, but to use it. And you can't be like, oh, here, take this puppet and be very careful with it because I just made it. You want to be able to then have to say, great, I'm going to do what I need to do with this. And so when you have a physical performer like Jim Carrey performing your puppets, you just want to be ready so that if inevitably something happens or the thumb tears through, you go, great. And here's number two. Whoop, and we're ready to go again.
Yeah. Even on Crank Anchors, which was, we built puppets for the most recent two seasons. Even myself as a performer who also built puppets for that show, many of the puppets of the show, I wasn't precious about them at all.
Right.
Like you can't treat them like with kid gloves. They're tools to do a scene.
Yeah.
And you go in there and do what you need to do. And you just know that there are people standing by ready to fix and repair anything that might happen.
It's like
today.
It's like, yeah, if you have a hammer and your job is to hammer down a nail, you can't just do it gingerly hoping you don't break anything. You just eventually got to take a swing at it and hit the nail.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So now you both serve as additional puppeteers on the Disney Plus series, Earth to Ned. What was that like?
Well, this would be an awkward edit, but we didn't work on that show. But I heard it was a lot of fun.
I saw in the credits it said that you were on it. It was probably an IMDb thing.
Oh, cool. How fun. My favorite credits of the shows I didn't get to work on.
Yeah, my favorite.
Although, unfortunately, we didn't get residual. However,
my favorite show... My favorite show that I didn't work on was the Dora the Explorer movie. And I've tried to remove it from my IMDb and they just won't do it. I'm
really?
Like,
wow.
I guess, really?
I guess they know better than me.
My favorite.
I could call SAG and say, where are my residuals?
My favorite credit for a film I never worked on was American Tail. That was a lot of fun.
It even says you're credited for it on Muppet Wiki. So I'll have to change that.
Sure. Yeah, go for it.
Yes.
One of my favorite movies that I did work on that I am credited for was Jon Favreau's The Jungle Book.
Yes.
Was completely unusual and different performing experience because the nature of the movie, the star of the movie was 10 turned 11 on set, and he's basically him. It's him, and it was a complete digital environment. So now it's come around full circle where now they're putting the screens up behind the actors with the LEDs and all that, like Mandalorian. But this was kind of like an immediate step to get to that. It was a full digital production, all shot in 3D for real with two lenses and on a whole blue screen set. And all the animals are digital. And so in order to have a 10 or, you know, soon 11 year old interacting and giving a convincing performance, there needs to be something for him to interact with. So they brought in puppeteers to be the something he's interacting with. So that was a really fun, completely unique performing experience. And I got to work on that for quite a while, because it was, as you can imagine, a whole brand new type of filmmaking that honestly has only pretty much been done once or twice, because then it kind of advanced, the technology has advanced into the LED screens that we have now.
It's interesting, when we were working on Kidding, for season two, puppeteers always have monitors, and that's their whole thing. That's how we see what the camera sees. And season two, they brought in a brand new team of people just to handle monitors. And these guys were like, oh yeah, we just, they're really nice. And they're talking to us, yeah, we just got off of working on the new, that new Star Wars show, man, that's going to be good. And I was like, oh, I didn't know anything about the Star Wars show. So when someone starts talking about something I don't know about, I just listen, because I might get some good information. And I go, oh, interesting. He goes, yeah, it was great. It was really interesting that with that new screen they're working on, and the dynamic qualities. And I'm like, oh, this is all new to me. I don't know anything about
this.
We
had no idea what that was there even saying.
And he says, and he goes, yeah, they're working on that. And then when they're on the Razor Crest, I said, oh, I don't know what that is, but I guess someday I'll find out. But
also it's
cutting edge stuff sometimes.
It harkens back to many, many, many years ago when we were just starting out as puppeteers. And a friend of ours, who's also a puppet builder and fabricator, and he works a lot in model shops, was like saying, yeah, it's crazy. This new Star Wars movie is going to be ridiculous. I'm like, what? He's like, there's just like this scene where they're like, I know, it's hard to describe. It's like chariots, like jet engines. And they're riding these chariots all around. And we're just like, oh my God, like, what is that? What even is that? And then it was obviously the pod race scene from Star Wars episode one. So it's fun to be in the industry and hear these little like crumbs. And we're just like,
It's also fun sometimes to see something that you have an opportunity to see it for the first time. Like, doing the Muppet Show at the end of that movie, or there's moments, sometimes performances happen and you go, oh, I have a front row seat. I'm among the first people ever in the world to see this thing that may become known, internationally.
Yeah. And then one of the most fun experiences, this is a very uniquely LA or big city thing, is seeing your puppets on billboards.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so yeah. There was a time.
Like, what the heck? You're like,
no, in LA, yeah, in 2019, it was a really very great year for our company. And then there was a time we were driving out LA, and on one street we could see a billboard for Waffles and Mochi, for Kidding, and for Disney, for Little Mermaid Live. I was like, oh, no, Crank Anchors. So there was a time I was like, oh, wow, all our puppets are gracing three different billboards. And
Sunset Boulevard is my favorite place in the world.
Yeah, not anymore. Now I don't know what's up there.
What billboards are there now? No puppets. No puppets. Who cares?
Right. So you had mentioned Waffles and Mochi a moment ago, which you also created puppets for. What was working on that like?
Yeah, it was fun. So Waffles and Mochi, once again, not a normal type of puppet project.
Yeah, intrinsic challenges.
Yeah, so
in this particular,
you have a character, first of all, who's all white in fur, and they're gonna eat food.
Yeah,
and it has to look like they're eating, and while traveling the globe.
Yeah,
so you have a globe trotting puppet that's gonna eat food. So when it left our shop, we had to know that this thing could do everything it needed to do, and if something happened in Peru, it was all going to work out okay.
So we did. The design process is sort of a longer design process. It's always interesting when you work with different companies. So whether it's, Amazon or Netflix or Disney, like they all have their own kind of, working style workflow. So this was a Netflix production. But then it's also on the other side of it, they had the whole Higher Ground side of it, which is Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, obviously they had their input and everything. So ultimately the puppet was designed by Drew Massey, of course, and also an illustrator and designer. So he actually kind of took some of the notions that had been explored and we did a test and all this sort of stuff. It was a process to get to the waffle puppet. And then ultimately we got the design, and then it was, you know, onto fabrication. But that particular puppet has some interesting challenges that people might not identify right away. Like, for example, the waffle belly and the waffle ears. You know, we experimented like literally just putting two-part foam in a waffle machine. Like, can we do that? Like, will it work? It did, but it was the wrong size. So ultimately what we ended up doing is we had Images of Motion, who are you know, our friends, and we mentioned them earlier. They created the waffles in the computer, the bellies and the ears.
Sculpted them.
They sculpted them in the computer, and then were able to print out a positive and then mold it. And so they ultimately cast them in flexible foam and then flocked them and airbrushed them. So that's how the waffle has such a delicious, crispy appearance.
And then Mochi also, that was a digital sculpt as well, that they sculpted little Mochi. And then it was cast in a very soft foam, a SRAM foam, which is generally used for stop motion because it's so soft and flexible.
Actually, well, it wasn't. We did experiment with SRAM.
That was no good.
It didn't have the movement quality that they wanted. It looked a little too...
Okay.
So it actually was a pillow foam.
All right, pillow foam.
It painted and
so we'll cut out the correction. and here we go again. Okay. So Mochi was made out of pillow foam and then also painted and flocked with, you know, very fine fibers. And I got to say, that puppet looks good enough to eat.
It looks delicious in person. And we probably had maybe a dozen before shooting. I know we had like...
With so many of them by the end, season two.
Yeah.
There were a lot of Mochi puppets. And also season two was fun because there was an opportunity to design some new characters.
Right.
So there's a little Bella, which was a character that we designed and then built out of carved foam.
And then even some puppets that were made by another shop for season one, like the mop, for example, you know, they wanted to adjust some of the functionality and just kind of, you know, you learn a lot from doing the first season. And so we were able to take that puppet and just kind of rework the mouth. And
one of the big inventions that we have used on that is we have a laser cutter now that we didn't used to have before. And so we've been able to make more successful mechs for puppet mouths by doing laser cutting, because you can create perfect pieces that will line up exactly with each other. And that's how we ended up making that that mouth open and close, because the mop has a mustache that kind of hides a lot of stuff. So I could put a spring mechanism in there that would pull down the little mouth, and the trigger was well down in the handle of the mop.
And that way the mouth open and close is a little more apparent in the second season. Yeah. So, and then the waffle puppet itself, we had many, many hands working on that. Mm-hmm. So, we were doing it. Rachel Burson was one of the puppeteers, puppet builders. Liza, who is our go-to costume, designer, Liza Daly, she knitted all of the, scarves, which are hand knitted scarves. And then we had someone come in and make the boots. We had another person do the 3D printing for the goggles. So it was, you know, what looks like a pretty simple puppet had around 10 or 12 different people working on it.
And also a lot of different versions of that puppet.
Yeah, special effects legs. You know, we had rotted legs. We had unrotted legs. We had glove hands. We had regular hands. We had like five heads and bodies. We had a hero head, an eating head, a stunt puppet, a, you know, rig puppet. Like there was a lot of... actual puppets that went into making it look like one puppet could travel the globe and eat whatever they wanted.
Nice. So as we're kind of getting close to wrapping up here, Jake, why don't you take the next question?
Yeah. So thank you, Chris. So for you, Beffa, can you share any projects you're currently working on, if you're allowed to talk about it? Of course.
I would say that you know, our business kind of goes between performing, which you spoke a lot about, larger project we talked about, but also we have clients that are smaller but big in their own way. Like, for example, the Treebies, which if you go to YouTube and put in the Treebies, this channel gets millions of views. It's a singer songwriter and up in Canada, he does all the puppetry himself. We made the puppets, and you know, that happens. We've made puppets for some education clients. Our rental puppets apparently are on billboards all over Texas.
Yes. The NTTA, which is
part of the NTTA, the travel authority there, Transit Authority. they're in commercials, they're on billboards, they're everywhere. So sometimes our puppets will pop up in the most unlikely of places. It's not always the,
yeah,
you know.
We built puppets for a children's book illustrator, Luke Flowers. We built a mermaid for him, and we built this Frankenstein puppet for him. So some of our best clients are names that no one here would even know.
Yeah, but right now we have a puppet up in Alaska,
right,
who does daily videos, you know, in Alaska. Oh,
cool. We built a puppet for a client that brought this one of our puppets to the Arctic, which is the furthest north that any of our puppets have ever traveled.
Wow.
Videos of it within the Northern Lights.
And we built some puppets for a client in Tennessee, and they're going to be using them to do a little independent series. And, you know, we might be going out to do some training with them. So it's like big projects, big and small.
And I would say if any of your listeners or your viewers are interested in a career in puppetry and they go, yes, but how do I get started? We always give three pieces of advice to people if you want to start a journey where you want to create a career in puppetry. Number one, join your local puppeteers guild. Google it, find it. Number two, attend a puppeteers festival. That could either be a national, regional, or the
Eugene O'Neill
Puppet Fest, anything like that. Number three, build your own show. Because if you can't hire yourself, why do you expect other people to hire you? So that thing that you think you ought to be doing, will start finding a way to get yourself paid to do it.
And if nothing else, you'll build the skills.
Right. And the contacts.
So that by the time the Muppets call or the Henson Company calls or someone else, you can actually have the goods.
So we started building puppets in 1990. And we walked onto our first Muppet set in
2010.
So I'm no good at mathematics, but I will say that's a long time of us not being on a Muppet set. And so the idea there is, if you do intend to do that kind of work, well, better start working on your skills now. And good news, everything you need to become the puppeteer or the builder you want to be is available to you right now. The cameras, the monitors, the materials, and now the online resources. You know,
we have some videos on our YouTube where we show how to make a puppet.
Swazzle Puppet Studio.
Yeah, Swazzle Puppet Studio on YouTube.
On Instagram, we like to share tips, tricks, and techniques that we use to build our puppets. And even just behind the scenes pictures is enough for someone to glean some information from and go, oh, that's what a mouth palette looks like, or that's what they use.
At Swazzle Puppet Studio, and we're also on Facebook. But really, Instagram is the way that people can reach us sometimes. They message us occasionally, but also through our website, swazzle.com. And if people, you know, are interested in like having a puppet, we have broken it all down. Like, here's the process to, you know, for making a puppet. Here are the rental puppets we provide. Here are, you know, it's all there. People fill out forms. And that's usually the start of a process that someone's thinking like, I want a puppet for my YouTube show. That's what we would say is go to the website, fill out the form, and let's see if we can make something for you.
Yes, absolutely. So to really end this off, so this podcast, of course, is called Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. When you think of nostalgia, what do you think of? Or in your own words, how would you define the word nostalgia?
Nostalgia is a sickness, but that's okay. You can Google that. I prefer looking forward to backward, but I would say that nostalgia is the fuzzy feeling you get when you see that picture of that play school chicken, or you smell the Play-Doh, or you open a box of crayons and you are brought back to a specific memory and a point in time that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I would say nostalgia is happening now. You just don't know it. And if you can acknowledge it, then pretty soon you'll have a better idea. You'll be able to really appreciate where you are right now. Because where you are right now is where people 20 years from now will want to be.
Absolutely. Great words to end on. Well, Sean and Patrick, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This was a blast.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Keep in touch. And very nice to meet you. I look forward to hearing the podcast or seeing it. I guess send us a link when it's all available.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And thank you so much, you know, for what you've done, and thank you for interest being a part of the show, and keep up a great work with what you guys are doing now. I cannot wait what's next in store.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
See you too.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.
Bye. It's goodbye from us as well, everybody. We absolutely enjoyed our time with Sean and Patrick Johnson from Swazzle. Keep on the lookout for more wonderful interviews coming your way. Links to their website and social medias, as they mentioned, will be in the description down below for people to connect or find their work, whatever. And as always, what do we say, Jake?
Keep nostalgia alive. Take care, everyone. See you next time. See ya. Bye.
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 Thank you for tuning in to another wonderful Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show interview. Be sure to follow Jake and the crew on social media and stream the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And as always, remember to keep nostalgia alive. Bye-bye.